You're listening to ABC Radio National's MP3 and podcast of Occam's Razor. Find out more, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Did you know that cars kill two people every minute? Worldwide, of course. The first person to be wasted by an automobile was poor Mrs. Driscoll in 1896. The car was demonstrating its astonishing capabilities and driving along at 4 miles per hour when it hit Bridget Driscoll, aged 44, and the impact proved fatal. I read all this in a delightful book called 50 Facts That Should Change the World. The author is Jessica Williams, and I talked to her last Thursday on In Conversation on ABC Radio National. And she records that the coroner, after that accident back then, announced in London, where the tragedy occurred, this must never happen again. Well, Harvard University and the World Health Organization predict that by 2020, road traffic accidents, or crashes as they should be called, will be the biggest cause of death or permanent injury in the world. The crashes cost countries between 1 and 2% of their GDP, their gross domestic product. And in the developing world, losses amount to $100 billion a year. That's about twice the amount of aid that they're given. There's more, of course, in Jessica's book. So what about Australia? Here are some reflections from science teacher Martin May, who's at De La Salle College in Melbourne.
My wife died in a car accident on the Nepean Highway last night. A young driver who'd been drinking swerved in front of her when speeding the opposite direction. Fortunately, this is fiction, but I'm putting myself in the shoes of the loved ones of the 15,000 Australians who've died on our roads since 1970. Take the real story from The Age of the 14th of April. The family trying to cope with the death of their 16-year-old son. He rolled their four-wheel drive down the driveway with a friend after a party. They drove off, and 45 seconds later, he was dead. I recall driving a car home from a party myself at 16 for a drunken friend when I'd never driven a manual car. I could easily have been one of the 15,000 myself. For every one of these deaths, there are 12 injured. That's another 180,000 people and families traumatised since 1970. What have we been doing about this ongoing tragedy? We brought in compulsory seatbelts, 0.05 laws, booze buses, and speed and red light cameras. Still, people are dying every day on the roads. Will we just accept that 300 tragedies have to happen each year and hope that no one in our family is one of them? The reality is that if you put a million ordinary people behind the wheel of lethal machines requiring constant concentration, some of them are bound to stuff up. Human beings make mistakes, and mistakes in cars are deadly. Less of a human tragedy, but more a picture of human stupidity and futility, is the aerial view of a gridlocked freeway at peak hour. Thousands of cars, bumper to bumper, averaging less than walking pace, and constantly pumping pollution and greenhouse gases into the air. Pick up your binoculars and have a closer look. Most of these cars have one occupant, the driver. A ton of precious metals dragged out of mines, every mine causing pollution, plus the highest technology of modern science, and then burning fossil fuels to move one human at walking pace. Insane? Ridiculous? Now lift your eyes from the multi-lane car park to the horizon around the city. The thick haze of pollution is highly visible against the hills. This is what we breathe 24 hours every day. I'm just this second imagining my lung cells battling to cope with the constant influx of carcinogenic chemicals. I used to think I was relatively safe living on Port Phillip Bay with the prevailing sea breeze from the southwest. But occasionally, the air literally stank. Then I read that the cause was the pollution being diverted back onto the southeast suburbs by the Dandenong Ranges. There is no escape from the muck in Melbourne's air. Sit yourself in a car in the middle of peak hour traffic and have the muck multiplied by all those motors. The scary thing is, Melbourne is one of the, so far, least congested and polluted cities in the world. So should we be wearing scuba gear and breathing masks as we drive? Some cyclists already feel the need to wear breathing masks as they ride. Or is there a better answer? In my job as a science teacher, teaching road science and science mysteries to year 10s, I've dared to suggest to these students a radical solution to the gridlock, the pollution and the road deaths. Get rid of the private car. Yes, your car and my car, the one sitting in your garage right now. Straight away, I can literally feel the pain in the accelerator nerves of all you car lovers out there. The teenagers with the hard-won P-plates and freedom, the young bucks with their gleaming utes and mag wheels, the spotless four-wheel drive set who feel so superior as they look down upon the flimsy little sedans in the next lane, the professionals who announce their success with the Merc or the BMW, the outer suburban woman who lives miles from public transport. Yes, we all love our cars and we need them. You can't take my car off me. Okay, we need to stand up, shake the anger out of our limbs, free up the imagination, and contemplate a science fiction scenario. Climb up the Rialto Tower and look around. All those peak hour cars have suddenly vanished from the highways and freeways. Instead, there are two orderly streams of 12-seater buses crossing the city, occasionally taking small detours into side streets to pick people up or drop them off. One stream is traversing the city constantly from south extremity to north and back again. The other stream is travelling east-west. All vehicles are moving freely without congestion. So much so that the left lane on all main roads and freeways has been allocated to bikes. There are thousands of fit and happy people, including school kids, riding safely in the bikes-only lanes. And they don't need gas masks. Why not? Because all of those thousands of minibuses are running on hydrogen fuel, produced by wind farms plus solar and geothermal plants. There is no vehicle pollution, and the air is clear. You can see what they're having for lunch as you look across the bay to Williamstown. The best news of all is that the casualty wards in all the hospitals are very quiet. With only trained bus drivers on zero alcohol and low traffic volumes, accidents are extremely rare. The road toll is down from hundreds dead to less than five in a year. So how does this amazing bus system work? Every bus is linked to a central computer. When you dial in the postcode you are heading for on your mobile or home phone, the computer registers your current position and sends the nearest bus travelling your way to pick you up in a matter of seconds, faster than you could get a car out of a garage. You jump on the bus, tell the driver your exact destination and swipe your travel card to pay for the trip. The driver is guided to each destination by a Melway screen and voiceover instructions. Turn left two streets after traffic lights, and so on. The bus will drop off and pick people up as it gets you there, but with no traffic congestion, the trip is much faster than the bad old car days. At the end of a year's travel, you sit down to work out your sums, and you find the cost was only a third of what it used to cost to own a car. At this point, I can hear the deafening screams of objections from all the car lovers. We live in a free country. You can't take our cars away. I don't want to get in a minibus with strangers. I want to climb into my machine, put on my own music, and travel where I want to, on my own. Thank you very much. And what about the thousands of car industry jobs, the Ford and Holden factories, and all those great customised cars that people like to have? Yes, we do live in a free country, and I'm thankful for it every day. The way to wean people voluntarily off their cars is to be clever, and to do it in stages. First, you replace the existing smoky diesel large buses and the whole taxi system with an initial fleet of computerised hydrogen minibuses. The people who used to use the old system get to see the benefits of door-to-door, cheap, convenient travel. Then, when demand rises, you ban cars from main roads and freeways at peak hour. All this travel is now done by minibus and the gridlock vanishes. No one has lost their car, but many will now sell them because they don't need them and therefore can do without the expense. Finally, when the bus system is well established and everyone sees the benefits, you make driving within city limits illegal on weekdays, except for those with special licences, tradespeople, delivery vans and trucks. The car fanatics can still cruise around on weekends in their beloved machines, but most sensible people, like me, have sold their cars and use minibuses and the bike always. If I want to play golf, I throw my clubs in one of the luggage holders at the back of the bus. Likewise, if I'm coming home with shopping bags, reusable of course, from the supermarket. I can sense the car lovers busily imagining spanners to throw in the works of this bus system. What if you just want to take the family for a drive in the country? Are we going to have to pay for some bored minibus driver to stand there all day looking at her watch while we have our picnic lunch? No, you hire the minibus yourself and drive it. A driver picks up your family and picnic lunch and hands over to you at a depot near the city edge. You pick up a driver on the way home. You pay higher for all this, but it's still much cheaper than owning a car. Besides, you've already turned the garage into a pool room with a full-size table. What a bonus. How about safety, you say, having had a bad experience once on a late-night train? You're in a minibus with your boyfriend coming home from a party and it stops to pick up a group of drunken louts from another party. They know the driver can refuse to take them, so they get the least drunken one to tell the driver their destination and swipe the cards and wheedle their way on board. Then they start to make crude jokes about you to your boyfriend and try to start a fight. Firstly, the driver is protected by a toughened glass screen and feels secure as she issues a police and video warning. The louts know every bus has video coverage to the central computer base and they are being recorded. If trouble continues, police are alerted and they will intercept the bus and charge the troublemakers. You tell me you're going to miss the music on your doof-doof stereo. Take an iPod on the bus then and thump your own brain without annoying others. The truth is that any scenario or problem you can come up with has a solution available with a little imagination. It will cost money to switch from private cars to a minibus system, but the improvement in city lifestyle and the saved lives will be worth it 1,000-fold. If Australia is the first country to do it, we could make a fortune selling the buses and the technology overseas. Thousands of jobs would be there for Australians. If we're not quick enough, another country will beat us, like Japan with its car-clogged Tokyo, or Iceland, which is already changing to an all-hydrogen system using geothermal heat. Have we got the brains and the guts to be first? Because history will show the private car was a luxury we could no longer afford once cities grew and everyone wanted to have one. 4 or 5 billion people, each with a lethal ton of precious metals, guzzling fossil fuels? I don't think so.
So, what do you think? Martin May teaches physics in Melbourne at De La Salle College. And the good news, by the way, is that this program, Occam's Razor, is now available for podcasting, along with the others on ABC Radio National that began the trial. And so you can listen henceforth whenever you please. Next week, crime fiction writer and University of Western Sydney lecturer Jane Goodall rides again, but not in a car. I'm Robin Williams.
ABC Radio National. More than 60 programs broadcast on more than 260 transmitters, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Live streaming on the net as well as media on demand streams. Find out how to get more out of Radio National. Go to abc.net.au/rn. And for the full list of MP3 and podcast programs, abc.net.au/rn/podcasts.